Hello and welcome to the Disclosure Podcast. I am your host, Ed. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I hope that you find this episode insightful. If you are new to the podcast, I have a catalogue of previous episodes and interviews discussing a broad range of different related topics surrounding veganism, morality, ethics, communication, and the environment, as well as discussing current events. If you want more episodes of the podcast, then you can sign up to my Patreon to get an exclusive patron-only Q&A episode every single month where I go through your questions. And finally, if you enjoy listening to the podcast, then it would mean the world to me if you could leave a review on iTunes. Thank you so much again for tuning in. So hello everyone and welcome back. It's been a little minute since I last uploaded, but I hope you enjoyed your summer holidays if you were on summer holidays. I hope you enjoyed the past 3 months. It's great to be back and I'm so excited to be able to bring season 3 to you guys, and I really hope that you enjoy the episodes that I have lined up for this season. In today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit, well, really expanding, I suppose, on my most recent upload, which was exposing the biggest scam that you've never even heard of. How one industry lied to the world. Now, if you haven't seen this video, then head over to my YouTube channel, which is Earthling Ed, and give it a watch, because it's really talking about the dairy industry. It's talking about the origins of the dairy industry, but it's also talking about all those backroom deals that happen between the dairy industry and the government. We focus a lot on the US government, but unfortunately it's a problem that exists all around the world, as many of us may already be aware. And so we talk a lot about government collusion and what that has meant over the past 100 years or so, and why it is now that, I suppose, dairy products are so ubiquitous and can be seen everywhere. I mean, one of the things that vegans often get frustrated about, right, is when we see on the packaging milk powder. And we think, well, why on earth is milk powder in this? Or we just see milk in random items. We're like, what is this doing in there? It doesn't need to be there. It doesn't make sense. Well, actually, there's a reason why there is so much milk and in particular cheese in everything. And it seems like that's increasing all the time. We see adverts for extra cheesy and more cheese and double the cheese and all these different things promoting the fact that there's more and more cheese on the items that we purchase, often, of course, in fast food restaurants. And so the purpose of this is really to discuss this, but also to discuss how we've been blinded, I suppose, by marketing, blinded by advertising, and deceived. Deceived by an industry that's taught us that we need milk for calcium, when actually that's not even close to being true. Of course, we can get calcium from other sources of food, plant-based foods, right? And so we don't need to get milk from dairy products. But we've been sold this idea over and over again that we need milk to be strong and healthy and to grow and to not suffer from osteoporosis and broken bones. Well, actually, the evidence suggests maybe the opposite is true. The evidence suggests that maybe actually the consumption of dairy exacerbates our risk of not only the things it says it prevents, but potentially even worse things: prostate cancer, breast cancer, heart disease, our leading illnesses and killers, unfortunately, in the Western world, interlinked with the food that we're told we need to be strong and healthy. How have we got this so wrong? How have we been raised in a society that turns its back on evidence-based scientific literature? Well, this is the biggest scam that you've never even heard of. So we're going to go through this. We're going to explore the main issues that we discuss in the video, but I wanted to go a little bit into more detail because there's some things that we couldn't fit in a 7-minute long video, which I also think are important. So let's get into it. Now, the origins of milk really can be traced back to the early 20th century. Now, of course, we began drinking milk, cow's milk, goat's milk as well, I suppose, during the domestication of animals. So this was, what, 10,000 years ago or so, the dawn of agriculture. Now, before then, of course, we didn't have access to milk other than, that is, the milk that our mothers produced. And so we weren't drinking the milk from other species of animals until we started domesticating them for agriculture. But really, when we started consuming large quantities of milk, and of course dairy products in general, really began after the First World War. And so during the First World War, the governments of the Allied forces were sending powdered and tinned milk to the front lines as a source of nutrition and calories for the soldiers who were fighting during the First World War. Now, because of this, obviously, an increase in dairy production was required. So this led to many dairy farmers expanding their herds, it led to many farmers getting into the dairy industry, and it led to many diversified farmers no longer being diversified, just simply swapping to dairy production. Now, of course, when the First World War ended, there was a little bit of a problem, because without the huge exports of milk products or dairy products to the front lines, there was less demand for milk in general, but the supply obviously remained exceptionally high. So what the dairy industry decided to do, along with the government, the US government in this case, was start to advertise milk as being something that's necessary, something that's important for development. And so we started seeing advertisements promoting people consuming milk and dairy products. And the USDA recommended that children in schools should drink 4 glasses of milk a day. 4 glasses a day. Now, obviously, when the Second World War started, this kind of same situation exacerbated itself again. And then out of the Second World War, we have this huge pivotal moment, I suppose, in agriculture, with the dawn of subsidization, with the dawn of industrialization. All these things started to play a part in the development of dairy farming. But importantly, the advertisements continued. Importantly, the decision was made not to reduce the supply of dairy, but to try and increase the demand. And so the USDA, but also in the UK as well, school children were given free milk. And the lunch program in the US made milk mandatory with the lunchtime meals. So you had to have milk with your meal at school, a way of pushing more and more dairy products onto people. But there was a catch, a big problem, which is that even with the fact that the government was colluding with the dairy industry to give dairy products to children and trying to force it on people, there was still too much supply. There was still an oversupply of dairy products compared to the amount that was being consumed. This obviously posed a huge problem to the dairy industry because this isn't good economics. And so they worked with the US government to create a buyback scheme where the US government began buying back the surplus dairy products. Now, as they were buying these surplus dairy products back, they had to be stored. And so the US government was storing these excess dairy products in huge underground warehouses, massive bunkers filled with dairy products, long life dairy products like processed cheeses and ways that milk could be congealed to make it last longer, of course. As we get into the 1970s, a big problem started to emerge, which was that the US government was spending huge amounts on buying back these dairy products, $500 million every single year, just buying back surplus. Now, of course, when people started to hear about this, they became increasingly annoyed and frustrated. Taxpayers' money being used to buy back a product that didn't need to be produced and was now being stored in huge underground warehouses. How could that possibly be a good idea? And so when Ronald Reagan came into power in the US in the 80s, this was something he was criticized for. And so he changed the program. And so one of the things he did with the surplus is he started distributing the cheese out to people who were low income, who struggled to afford food. It was called government cheese. And so people were given all this processed cheese from the government as a way of saying, look, we know you're struggling financially with food to have all this processed cheese. I mean, it's not benevolent when you think about what you're feeding these people. That's not a benevolent action. This was just Ronald Reagan trying to get rid of all this cheese he had stored underground because he was facing so much criticism. And if we really wanted to help people who were low income and who couldn't afford to feed themselves, then give them a highly processed cheese product that's high in saturated fat and high in sodium is hardly the antidote to those socioeconomic problems. So nevertheless, he gave all this cheese, but he also changed how the buyback process was being run. And so he put an end to that extreme amount of money being spent on buying back dairy products. Now, unfortunately, that isn't the end of buying back surplus dairy products. Unfortunately, it still happens to this day where the US government does that. And of course, the US government is consistently bailing out not just the dairy industry, but the animal agriculture industries in general. A great example of this was early 2018 when the Trump administration gave the dairy industry $1 billion. The only reason was the dairy industry had made less money in 2017. How can that be fair? If consumer demands are changing and the marketplace is shifting, how is it right that the government then steps in and gives the money back to the industry as a bailout? Taxpayers' money given to an industry that we, the taxpayers, are turning our back on. That doesn't make sense. That's not fair. That's not equal. That isn't a just system. But that's what happened in 2018, $1 billion. Anyway, if we go back a couple of decades, after this happened with the ending of the scheme of buying back dairy, dairy farmers were obviously upset about this. And so they lobbied to Congress to change rules, which meant they could set up something called the Dairy Checkoff Program. So the Dairy Checkoff Program is a program where dairy farmers put in a certain percentage of money every single year, let's say every single month. So for a certain amount of dairy they produce, they have to put in a certain amount of money. It's a very low number percentage wise, but actually with all the dairy farmers doing this, it creates a huge amount of money. Now, the purpose of this money is to do a few different things. Primarily it's for advertisements. So we all know the Got Milk campaign, right? The Got Milk campaign is potentially the best example of not only a dairy campaign, but also the dairy checkoff in action. I think it's now called the Dairy Management Program, but that was the best example, right? Huge campaigns that have been going for what, maybe 2 decades now? I think it's still ongoing, right? Promoting dairy. You know, we think about the Got Milk mustache on celebrities, even on fictional characters like Superman, right? Was seen with a milk mustache. It was a huge campaign and still is, I suppose, right? But significantly in the late 90s and early noughties, of course, it was a huge program that was paid for by the Dairy Checkoff. Now, on surface value, of course, the idea of the industry paying for advertisement is not particularly controversial. But here's where it starts to get more controversial, which is that another purpose of the Dairy Checkoff is to, I guess, work with and lobby fast food restaurants and chains in general to incorporate more dairy into their menu. You might go, for example, to Domino's Pizza, and you might say, well, hang on a minute, there's scope here to get more cheese on the pizza. And in fact, this is exactly what happened. This was 2009. This is from the New York Times. It says, Domino's Pizza was hurting early last year. Domestic sales had fallen, and a survey of big pizza chain customers left the company tied for the worst tasting pies. Then help arrived from an organization called Dairy Management, the Dairy Checkoff Program. It teamed up with Domino's to develop a new line of pizzas with 40% more cheese and proceeded to devise and pay for a $12 million marketing campaign. So basically, you go to a company, the dairy management says, look, if you put more cheese in this product, we'll give you some money to promote it and help with the sales. It's exactly what happened. And as the New York Times says, consumers devoured the cheesier pizza and sales soared by double digits. But this is a problem, right? Because of course, not only are people consuming a product that's more unhealthy for them, dramatically more unhealthy, because of course we know that dairy products are linked to a whole host of different diseases. And as the New York Times points out, one slice of this pizza contained as much as 2/3 of a day's maximum recommended amount of saturated fat in just one slice. But people don't eat one slice, of course. So that's a huge problem. The New York Times goes on to say, and Dairy Management, which has made cheese its cause, is not a private business consultant. It is a marketing creation of the United States Department of Agriculture, the same agency at the center of a federal anti-obesity drive that discourages overconsumption of the very foods dairy management is vigorously promoting. Urged on by government warnings about saturated fat, Americans have been moving toward low-fat milk for decades, leaving a surplus of whole milk and milk fat. Yet the government, through the Dairy Management Program, is engaged in an effort to find ways to get dairy back into Americans' diets, primarily through cheese. It goes on to say, Dairy Management, whose annual budget approaches $140 million, is largely financed by a government-mandated fee on the dairy industry. This is the money that dairy farmers pay in. But it also receives several million dollars a year from the Agriculture Department, which appoints some of its board members, approves its marketing campaigns and major contracts, and periodically reports to Congress on its work. So this is where we have a significant problem when it comes to the collusion between the industry and the government. Because on the one hand, the USDA are the government organization that set out the nutritional guidelines. They're the ones that are telling people what to eat to be healthy. So if you're a parent, you're someone who's trying to eat well, you turn to the USDA to see what to feed your child or to see how you should live healthy. And the USDA is telling you, oh, you should consume all these cheese products, whilst also working with the dairy industry. The USDA has board members within dairy management. The USDA gives money to the dairy management. The taxpayer gives money to dairy management to not only advertise dairy products, but to work with fast food chains to make them unhealthier, to make them fattier, to make them less sustainable, of course, less ethical, of course. There is so much collusion at play here. How can it be right? I mean, how is it justified that the department that is lobbied by agricultural industries and works directly with agricultural industries and even gives money to agricultural industries to promote their products is the same department that outlines how we should be eating, the nutritional guidelines? That's just an absolute recipe for disaster. How could it ever be anything other than a recipe for disaster? It is deceitful, it's corrupt, it's disgusting. It's so horrendous to think that people out there are following these guidelines when these guidelines aren't created in the interest of the everyday person, they're created in the interest of the industries who lobby them and who they financially support. How can that be right? It is so wrong. It's something we have to be aware about, of course, because through being aware of these things, you can start to make changes. You can start to focus your attention on, I suppose, looking for something a little bit more objective. And another example of where this became, I suppose, particularly concerning is back in the noughties, there was kind of this bogus study, really, that was saying that people who consumed, I think it was 4 servings of dairy a day, were at no higher risk of gaining weight than those who were on, say, 1 serving of dairy a day. Basically saying that there was no correlation between increased dairy consumption and increased weight, which is, of course, just farcical, right? But the problem is, this actually was run with by the dairy industry. They took this, and I think for several years, they were advertising dairy products as not causing weight growth, which led to the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine to actually sue a couple of companies and also the dairy industry. And here's a little, well, it's just so interesting. This is a report or an article written by the Dairy Reporter back in 2008, which is talking about this lawsuit. And so the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine had basically sued Kraft, General Mills, and Danone, as well as the International Dairy Foods Association, the National Dairy Council, and Dairy Management, the Dairy Checkoff, claiming that they were misleading consumers with deceptive advertising that makes scientifically unsubstantiated claims about the effect of dairy products on weight loss. I mean, you'd think that it'd be relatively common sense to think that something that's incredibly high in saturated fat, in fact, cheese is the number one source of saturated fat in the American diet, and I'm pretty sure it's probably the same in most Western countries' diets as well. You would think that the food item that contributes most to saturated fat intake might also have a correlation to increasing weight. And especially, of course, when we think about the purpose of dairy, we think about where cow's milk comes from. It comes from a cow. What is the purpose of cow's milk? The purpose of cow's milk is to make a newborn baby calf, who's very small, grow into a huge cow. It is meant to create rapid growth, rapid weight gain in a cow or in a bull, right? In a newborn baby calf. So again, if you think about the purpose of milk being about rapid weight gain, and it's the number one source of saturated fat in the American diet, you would think that common sense might prevail, that logically you'd think that there is no way this doesn't promote weight gain, especially when we're talking about 4 servings a day. Of course it's going to start promoting weight gain. But with these unsubstantiated or bogus scientific claims, the dairy industry ran with it. But this is the problem, because the USDA allowed them to. The USDA was in on the promotion, on the advertising. The USDA endorsed the idea that consuming dairy didn't promote weight gain. The USDA said that that was fine, whilst outlining the nutritional guidelines telling people how to be healthy. It's so outrageous. So anyway, PCRM sued these organizations and these companies. This is from the Dairy Reporter. This is how the dairy industry responded to the lawsuit. The headline says, "Group behind food lawsuit accused of extremism." Of being extreme. They said that they're not interested in helping consumers. In fact, the direct quote says, "The food industry supported Center for Consumer Freedom believes that the group PCRM is deliberately misleading consumers and has animal rights motivations." The reason, of course, they have animal rights motivations is PCRM advocate for a 100% plant-based diet, because scientifically speaking, that is the healthiest diet that we've been proven to have. So they advocate that based on scientific literature. And of course, that means excluding all animal products. And so they say, well, because they don't want to consume animal products, they're animal rights extremists trying to portray this scientific organization as having these nefarious AR extremist values because they want you to be as healthy as you can be. But then they say that they're misleading the consumer. It's kind of a bit like the pot calling the kettle black, right? Or is that age-old tactic to accuse them of your wrongdoing to make it seem like it's not on you, or they're the ones wrongfully misleading the consumer? Oh, it's not you, is it? The company that takes millions or billions from the taxpayer in subsidies and from the USDA for advertising, who makes bogus scientific claims that contradict not only the scientific literature, but just basic common sense. No, You're not misleading consumers. You're not misleading consumers by going to fast food chains and putting more dairy products on those items and then paying for huge marketing campaigns to make the consumer buy them unknowingly about how dangerous it is to their health. No, that's not misleading consumers. But suing these industries for false scientific claims, that's misleading. My favorite thing is that at the end, it says that they doubt that the case will be passed. They say this latest case will be thrown out. And unfortunately, hindsight is because actually the lawsuit succeeded and they had to retract the claims. And now they can no longer make the claim that consuming dairy products does not promote weight gain. But it seems so crazy to me that the USDA was in on that. They were allowed to perpetuate that. And this is the state of the world, the state of the dairy industry, the state of the collusion, the corruption that's gone into all of this. Now, there was a couple of recent studies that really are very alarming in the context of this. There was a study that followed tens of thousands of North American women for about 8 years or so, 7.9 years, and found that those that consumed somewhere between 2 to 3 servings of milk a day. Now, bear in mind, the USDA recommends 2.5 servings. So basically anyone, any North American woman that was followed, who followed the USDA guidelines, had a 70 to 80% chance, or higher chance, of getting breast cancer. 70 to 80% higher chance. And importantly, those who weren't consuming dairy but were consuming soya had a reduced risk, I think, of around 36%. I mean, we think about breast cancer, I think it's the third most common cancer that kills people. Number one, lung cancer. Number two, bowel cancer. Number three, breast. And I believe number four, prostate. And now prostate cancer has also been linked to dairy consumption. A meta-analysis that looked at variety of different reviews and studies with just over 1 million participants, I believe it was, said that dairy consumption was directly linked with an increased risk of prostate cancer. And actually, again, those who were plant-based had a reduced risk of prostate cancer. It gets to the point where it's not just, this is terrible, the government's colluding, blah, blah, blah. It gets to the point where this is nefarious, where it's evil, where people are following the guidelines and are getting sick and dying because of it, where science is being ignored and people's lives are on the line. It's sick. It's really, really evil and wrong. And this is why it's important, I suppose, to emphasize that this is one of the biggest lies. When we think about what it is we've been taught, but think about how ingrained the idea is that we need dairy to be healthy. Think about how ingrained the idea is that if you don't drink cow's milk or eat cheese, you won't get enough calcium in your diet and you'll have brittle bones. It's not just that it's ingrained, it's that it's staunchly defended by the average person because they don't know any different, because that's what we're told from the moment we're born. I remember being a child, I didn't like cow's milk, but I remember being given cow's milk and being told that I had to drink it because I needed to be healthy. It's really dangerous and really scary to think of the indoctrination that's happened and what that leads to. Breast cancer, prostate cancer, heart disease, a whole host of chronic illnesses and diseases that are not only reducing people's quality of life, but killing them. People's mothers and fathers and sons and daughters dying because the science is being ignored because it doesn't suit the vested interests of not only the industries, but the government departments that work with the industries. And another thing that I thought was interesting to mention was the concept of marketing again, but focusing on whey, right? We think about whey, like whey powder, whey protein. And again, it's just a ubiquitous item now, but it wasn't always like that. In fact, historically, whey is, of course, a byproduct of cheese making. It's considered a waste product by the industry. And so what the industry used to do, I mean, this is so not surprising, but again, so bewildering, is they took all the whey and they pumped it into rivers and streams in the US. Now, what happened is the rivers and streams started to have harmful algae blooms. And what that meant really is that it took out all the oxygen from the water. Of course, caused algae blooms and dead zones, oxygen dead zones. So what happened is the government eventually prohibited this practice. So that was a problem, right? You're a dairy producer, a cheese producer, and normally you just dump all the waste into rivers and streams, into the environment, which is a classic dairy tactic. We have it all over the world in the UK, manure being dumped, just dumped into rivers and streams, killing off wildlife, killing off biodiversity. There's just this dumping of waste that goes on all the time in the animal agriculture industry. And it's not surprising because, of course, animals are constantly producing waste, feces, urine. That has to go somewhere. We don't just have a magic pit where all this waste can go. So it gets spread across fields, so it goes into streams and rivers, into the local ecosystems, and it destroys nature, destroys biodiversity. It's a scary and terrible thing that it's allowed to happen. And not only that it's allowed to happen, but people know it's going on and there's never any punishment. There's never any inclination that it's going to stop because it just won't be viable. And of course, the industry lobbies the government departments. Thankfully, with the whey thing, they came up with a solution which allowed this to happen. The solution was, of course, well, we can't just dump it anymore, so we should sell it. We should give it to consumers. Hang on a minute, we've got this byproduct, this waste product. If we told consumers it was really good for them and it would help them build strong muscles and we could just put it in protein powders and such, then all of a sudden we're going to make loads more money from people who think that consuming whey is all of a sudden this amazing ingredient, when actually if we don't tell them it's just a byproduct from the cheese making process and it's completely useless to us. And so all of a sudden now, whey is everywhere, in protein powders, in bars. It's all over. It's ubiquitous, right? But actually, it's just a waste product that through marketing and advertising was sold to us as this incredible product that's full of protein, will help us meet our fitness goals. It's just a waste product from the dairy industry, and they couldn't dump it into the environment any longer. So they came up with an idea to market it as something that you would want. When in reality, why would you want to consume this waste product from the cheese-making process? There's nothing inherently good about whey that you can't get from a plant-based source instead. The amino acids, right? The protein profiling. You can get that in a plant-based alternative instead, but they sold it to us as something we think that we need to be strong and healthy and to build muscle. It's just a waste product. So I think it's really important to look beyond, I suppose, and why I think it's important to talk about this now is we're at this kind of precipice, I suppose, where milk consumption has been steadily on the decline. So in the US since the 1970s, milk consumption has declined by about 40%. But in the UK, it's declined by about 50%. Now, that's remarkable. Of course, we've had bankruptcy of certain dairy companies, Dean Foods, and Boden, I believe, was the other one, Foods in the US. Huge dairy producers going bankrupt. We've also had companies like Elmhurst Dairy, who are now called Elmhurst Milked. I think in 2016, they went from being one of the oldest dairy companies. They, I think, were founded in 1908. They then switched from being a dairy producer to a plant milk producer. So now they do a range of different nut and plant milks instead. So things are changing. In the UK, it's changing as well. Arla, for example, the huge dairy cooperative, are now introducing plant-based milks to their range. That's a great sign of the changing times, but we can't get ahead of ourselves too much. Two reasons. Firstly, actually, even though milk consumption has declined, cheese consumption has increased. Now, I think the reason this is significant is because this ties directly into what we've just been talking about. It's no wonder cheese consumption has increased when these industries are working with fast food chains to get more cheese into products. It's no wonder the case that that's happening when Domino's Pizza are incorporating 40% more cheese into their pizzas. It's a scary indictment of the fact that these tactics do have an effect on people. I do think it's important to state as well that in the US, the reports to Congress from the USDA, when they talk about the dairy management scheme to Congress, they talk about it as being a success in terms of the amount of cheese they've been able to shift. So, for example, the dairy management success is, I guess, weighed in the millions of pounds of cheese served. So the more cheese they serve, the more they consider it to be a success. That's how the USDA, the government department, views the dairy management scheme. And so in 2007, the department highlighted Pizza Hut's Cheesy Bites pizza and Wendy's dual double melt sandwich concept, as well as Burger King's Cheesy Angus Bacon Cheeseburger and Tender Crisp Chicken Sandwich. Both featured two slices of American cheese, a slice of pepper jack, and a cheesy sauce, the department said. And they boasted that because of these efforts, the department reported that they helped generate a cheese sales growth of nearly £30 million. So it's no wonder that cheese consumption has increased, but milk consumption has decreased. Now, of course, milk consumption is decreasing because consumer attitudes are changing, but cheese is increasing because as much as people's attitudes are changing, the government departments are working with the industry to get more cheese in products. So it's really hard to balance that out. When you're turning people, or people are changing and people are shifting away from consuming dairy products, but those that continue to do so are being fed more and more and more cheese all the time. It's a really scary prospect. At some point, it's got to end, right? At some point, there's a limit to how much cheese you can force on people before you start to think to yourself, well, maybe if we just change the supply chain and, I don't know, stop dairy farming and maybe reduce the supply, that would be a more effective way of safeguarding people's health and, of course, protecting the environment, protecting animals. But of course, the industry doesn't care about this, do they? They don't care about this at all. And this is the second reason why we can't be complacent. Not only because cheese is increasing, even though milk is decreasing and people swapping to plant-based milk, the second reason is the industry doesn't seem like it's going to give up. The industry is not just going to stop dairy farming and call it a day. Instead, what they're looking to do is shift their attention to the Asian market. This is scary because Asia is the area of the world that has among the lowest rates of prostate cancer, breast cancer, and also osteoporosis, three things that are directly linked to dairy consumption. And not only that, but Southeast Asia and Asia in general is among the area of the world with the highest rates of lactose intolerance. Because it's not just that people are being forced to consume milk in, say, schools because they've been given it as a free thing they have to consume, as it used to be. It's that these people are also often lactose intolerant. Globally, 65 to 75% of people are lactose intolerant. And interestingly, those of us who aren't lactose intolerant are only so because of a genetic mutation. We've adapted, not because it's some natural thing for us, we've changed. But actually, the majority of the world can't digest lactose, and so they're lactose intolerant. But the dairy industry doesn't care. They were forcing children who were lactose intolerant to drink milk for decades. They didn't care then. They don't care now. The USDA doesn't care. It recommends that people should consume milk and cheese and dairy products. It doesn't tell people, hang on a minute, you can get all the calcium you need from plant-based sources. Now, they tell you, no, you want to eat some cheese. Cheese is good for you. It's got protein in it. It's got calcium in it. Of course, you can get this from a plant-based diet, but the USDA won't mention that. But they know that people have lactose intolerance. They know that people struggle and have health complications, but they don't give people the alternatives. It's terrible. But in Asia, the area of the world that has among the highest rates of lactose intolerance, the lowest rates of breast, prostate, cancers, and osteoporosis. And that's where the dairy industry is shifting, selling and exporting more products to the Asian market. This has been happening in recent years. The exports of these products are increasing. As the dairy industry isn't going to stop exploiting animals, they're not going to stop destroying the environment, they're not going to stop taking subsidies from the taxpayer, they're just going to start exporting. And the subsidies, by the way, are not going to change. If dairy farmers are exporting to the Asian market, that doesn't mean that we're not subsidizing them still. Countries are still subsidizing producers of products even though they're exporting them because citizens of the areas where they're being produced are turning their back on them. And so as a taxpayer, we pay to subsidize the industry. And the industry is then shipping those products off because we as taxpayers or we as citizens don't want to eat those products anymore. The corruption is startling. And so that's why we can't get complacent, because us no longer consuming these products doesn't necessarily change how dairy farmers operate. They'll just look for different markets. They'll look for different people. They'll look for different citizens. And lo and behold, dairy consumption is rising in an area of the world that historically has had incredibly low dairy consumption. Advertisements are increasing. The propaganda is going up. The rhetoric that we've been used to for decades is now being heard across Asia for the first time for many people. They've been told, you need milk to be healthy, for your bones, for calcium, for protein, for vitamin D. All the things that we've been used to hearing for so long. That packet of lies is now being exported alongside all of those products. And that's a real problem. All right, guys, let's end the podcast for this week here. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you haven't seen the video yet, then do go to my YouTube channel, Earthling Ed, and check it out. It's packaged in a really concise 7-minute format, and it's great to share with people if you think people should hear this as well, and you've got friends who consume dairy, they don't think about it, and you want to show them why it's corrupt, you want to show them why it's immoral from the industry's perspective, you want to show them why it's not good for them to do so, and you want to show them why they've been tricked into doing so, then send them that video. And I hope it encourages people to think differently and to ultimately switch to a plant-based diet and a vegan lifestyle. All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this first episode of season 3. I really look forward to speaking to you in the next episode. But until next week, stay safe, look after yourselves, live vegan, and I look forward to speaking to you all very, very soon.